And she did basically work in terms of talking to all the affiliates and has put together a packet of information, a report for us that we were given this morning. It's called the Pacifico Affiliates Report. Anyway, so we've asked Ursula to open this up. And we do have a board committee on this also that includes Teresa, who's the chair, myself, Ray LaForest, and Pete Bramson, who can't be here, and then also Dina Colbert. I'm sorry, I don't have all the names. A number of people from different affiliate stations were also part of the committee. They're not all here this weekend. But we wanted to open this up by hearing from Ursula on the work that she did and any insights and recommendations that she has for us. Thank you. Okay.
This is Ursula Rudenberg. I'm from New York City. And as Leslie said, I conducted a study in the last month and a half by speaking with the 60 stations, which comprise the majority of what have been Pacifica's affiliates in the past, and some of them are also in the present. There are a few more stations that are unaccounted for, but this is really the majority of people that have called themselves Pacifica affiliates. These stations exist in 28 states around the country, including Alaska and Hawaii, and they are non-commercial stations. They all reside between 88.1 and 91.9 on the non-commercial band in the radio. Of these, I'm just giving you a real brief description of what the stations are and the context of the discussions, and then point out what I think is most important about the situation today with the stations and recommendations what the committee should consider as it begins to make policies regarding the affiliates. The stations themselves, of the stations, 34 are college stations. The majority were college stations. Of those, only 7 were solely college stations. The rest were a combination between community and college stations, which basically means the license is owned by a university or a college, but the actual programming and volunteer and financial support is a combination between the college and the surrounding community. And 26 of the stations I talked with are solely community stations. So just to give you a sense of who these stations are. And, I'd like to explain that the affiliates, when I started this report, I didn't understand how affiliates work, and so it's possible that some of you listening might not know either if you're anything like me. So just to admit real briefly, basically the affiliates receive the programming from a satellite, which is commonly known as the KU band. Up until 1997, Pacifica sent its programming up to the C-band, which is owned by the public radio satellite system and managed by National Public Radio. In 1997, Pacifica decided to move its programming from the C-band to an entirely different satellite called the KU-band, and where it is today, and today that is managed by Jim Bennett. And, pardon me? That's at, Jim is at KPFA, but where the band actually comes down, maybe, I'm not quite sure if it's actually KPFA or if it's nearby.
That's okay.
Yeah, I'm not sure. Anyway.
That's okay. We'll find out later.
Okay. Oh, okay. Yes. KPFA is managing the KU band. This is true.
Okay, Jim. Jim's up here already. Why don't you just explain real quickly?
Yeah, but one important thing to note is that the actual use of the KU came about because of an affiliate of Pacifica, KFCF. It was their equipment initially that gave Pacifica the idea, because that's how they were receiving KPFA's signal, that if we got another channel adjacent to theirs, we'd be able to do this satellite programming for affiliates. So it's because of an affiliate that we have affiliates.
Got it. Right. Okay. When Pacifica decided to take the KU ban, this was part of a larger strategy that Pacifica adopted around 1997. And the idea was to build an entire distribution system. And the idea was that Pacifica was going to fill this band with Pacifica programming. So this was a time of expansion. And Pacifica did a great deal of promotion of its distribution program during the time. It at this time, 22 new stations joined Pacifica. This was around between 1997 and 2000, which is really is 36% of the stations which have considered Pacifica affiliates. And this expansion is related to the promotion that Pacifica did. Pacifica offered to give out free satellite dishes with if people sign contracts. Also, it's connected to the creation of Democracy Now!, the creation of the Iran-Contra programming, and also the development of Pacifica News. So this was between 1996, the latter part of the 90s was this enormous time of expansion, and then beginning around the end of the 1990s, around 2000 to 2002, was a very dramatic collapse in affiliate relations. So I'm giving just a little bit historical perspective to get a sense of the different periods of relations with affiliates. the collapse of affiliate relations, as I call the different stations, it has been referred to as the implosion of Pacifica by most of the affiliates. And this period of time saw a 72% drop in affiliates. And this drop happened in waves. The first wave happened when Free Speech Radio News left Pacifica in 2000. And at that time, 8 stations left with the Stringers. And the second wave happened when Democracy Now! Left Pacifica Airways, when 19 stations left Pacifica. During this time, at least other stations reported leaving Pacifica, too, for kind of general unhappiness with Pacifica, ranging anywhere from unhappiness with contracts, lack of communication, and just a general feeling of chaos that was besetting the network, and unreliable programming. And by the end of this period, which really is ended by the settlement in the beginning of 2001, we really only had 17 affiliates left, and really had an affiliate program that was left in tatters, with stations gone, and those stations that were remaining were heavily taxed in their loyalty and very beleaguered. And so the last period between the settlement at the beginning of 2002 and today has really been experienced as a period of rebuilding, and most of the stations I spoke with expressed that sentiment. There's a time of relative hope and ambition to rebuild some sort of coalition with Pacifica in most cases. Since we have gotten, since this IMPV, IPNV has inherited control over the network, we have lost 5 stations. 4 of the stations left when PNN ended, and 1 station left because they just didn't feel that we were reliable as a network because we were too disorganized. Notably, 1 station left and also doesn't want communication with Pacific anymore because they weren't warned that Pacifica National News was ending and found themselves without a broadcast one day and felt humiliated in front of their audience. However, today, most of the stations I spoke with are feeling very positive. 25 stations have already come back, which is really 58% of the affiliates that we lost. Today, we have 36 affiliates, and there are more affiliates that are interested in coming back. 8 say they're very likely to come back in the near future. Contracts are being reformulated. Brian Gibbons in Washington, D.C., and Mariana Brockovich the archives in Los Angeles.
Yes.
At the archives in Los Angeles, have been contacting the radio stations and making agreements with them. The agreements are very idiosyncratic. There's no one way that the contracts are happening, and the prices are extremely varied. An average contract might be about $4,000 a year, but that's really not, it's very hard to really say what the price is. It depends on the station and their circumstances. Stations are also creating all sorts of forms of contracts. Some stations don't want to sign a contract with Pacifica for at least a year because they don't trust us yet. Other ones feel fine about it. Some only want to buy one program, call themselves a la carte buyers. There are also all sorts of versions now of what a contract looks like. There is a pretty high level of disorientation. When I spoke with the stations, they were confused about who's calling them and why, and we're hoping to have more clarity in the near future. And finally, the programs that they are taking from Pacifica to a large extent are Democracy Now! And Free Speech Radio News. They're taking these from the KU band and paying Pacifica for them. I think they are, of the affiliates we have, 28 are buying both of those, not necessarily the same stations, but we are selling 28 to 28 stations these shows. Other shows that they buy are the specials that we put on, particularly protest coverage. And and then there's other shows that we have available, which are the, you know, Pacifica shows like that we normally hear, like Counterspin or Alternative Radio, shows put on by individual producers that put them up on the KU band. These shows are also often available on the National Public Radio band, the C band. So what happens often is that stations will take it from the C band, but will use Pacifica's KU band as a backup system, just in case. Also, some stations just like to have the Pacifica KU band so that, especially with college stations, the students can pick and choose shows at will. So that just gives you an idea kind of what the situation is today. It's I have a note here that says Democracy Now! Did not leave Pacifica. It was censored off. That's, I apologize if I made that impression. just to finish this talk, I don't want to take up too much time, but just to wrap up the ideas really communicated with these talks, I got very much the impression that we have some very, very powerful assets still at Pacifica, despite the fact that people are extremely mistrustful and confused about their relationships with us. A very powerful asset is the incredible loyalty that is expressed by many of the stations. Pacifica still holds the reputation as being the pioneer in alternative media and has a tremendous amount of status because of that. And that many of the stations I talk to feel that they share a vision with Pacifica and because of that want to remain loyal and stay attached to Pacifica because they feel that this is a way of expressing that vision. Also, the programs we have created have been validated. Free Speech Radio News and Democracy Now! In particular are very strong shows. Many, many stations rely on these shows to as resources they can't afford to have newscasts and also just a level of production that they can't afford, as well as the other kind of programming coming out of Pacifica. And finally, the large vision that was expressed by Pacifica's affiliate program in the 1997 in a strange sort of backhanded way has grown to be very meaningful. It's not clear to me how meaningful that vision was in 1997, what the actual motives were for creating this distribution system, but the truth is that this has become a venue, a vision for many of the affiliates where the idea of a place where a certain synergy between alternative media can exist has become a very real vision, and that's actually a very powerful asset at this time that we need to consider. We do have some real problems that the committee has to consider when they begin to make policies. First of all, just as our reputation is our asset, it is also our biggest liability. We clearly, even though we have created and we've clearly succeeded in programming and communicating a vision, we clearly have failed to effectively administer this program. And the most clear and loud message I got in all of these calls is what do affiliates want? They want us to begin to administer affiliate relations on a day-to-day basis in a professional and meaningful way that they can handle, which means very simple things that like timely notices of technical problems, timely notices of special programs, timely notices of information embedded in our programming which they can't use, such as fundraising in pitches or local information. This creates havoc for them in their stations when they can't anticipate this because it does not apply to their listeners and it confuses their listeners. So they want time to compensate for this. They want to know when we're going to do specials so they can prepare for it and notify their listeners. And they want bulletins explaining to them things like the contract with Democracy Now. A lot of people ask me, is Free Speech Radio News going to come back to Pacifica? Is it going to stay away? Is Democracy Now? What is the relationship? They want information about that. And finally, the most clear demand that they made over and over again was that they want one outreach staff person at Pacifica with whom they can relate. They don't want calls from a lot of people anymore. They want one person with whom they can work on a day-to-day basis for the daily work of running radio. Okay, so another liability that, or another problem that we really have to look at is the idea of what is Pacifica's program package at this point. It's kind of an open question, and there is a lot of unclarity about what that means. Free Speech Radio News and Democracy Now! Are acquiring affiliates without Pacifica. To date, Free Speech Radio News has 21 new affiliates that do not pay Pacifica. They pay directly to Free Speech Radio News. And Democracy Now! Currently has 11. I'm not sure what the relationship there is, but clearly these shows are proceeding to promote themselves and to get through because they're excellent shows. And these stations are moving ahead without affiliating Pacifica. So Pacifica has to ask itself, what is the package that it offers? And within that, and then finally the last issue it has to address is the technology involved. Do we want to continue using the KU satellite? The problem with the KU satellite is that for a station to take on the KU satellite, it has to install different equipment. You can't use any other equipment. That I asked Jim Bennett today how much that costs a station. Say a new station wanted to become an affiliate, they would have to spend about $1,700 to acquire the equipment needed to do that. For some of these stations, that's a lot of money. We're not talking about large stations. So these are all liabilities that we currently have to resolve. Finally, to wrap things up, it's not my place to come up with answers to these questions, so I'm going to make four recommendations to the committee about what I feel they should consider. I think there has to be a redefinition of this concept of the distribution system as something that is something with a large vision. I think the large vision should be embraced. I think it's at this point has become associated with the mission of alternative media, and I believe particularly with the times that we're entering into, that this is a particularly potent and important vision that will take on a whole new meaning. I think there is safety in numbers and safety in the synergy that could be created by a large vision of shared programming with the affiliates. I think that there has to be consideration of what kind of staff resources Pacifica is willing to commit to fulfilling the trust that has been given us by the stations that have returned and to demonstrate that we can begin to become dependable. There's been a tremendous amount of trust and loyalty expect. On the other hand, the other shoe hasn't dropped. I think that we have used up all of our chips in terms of, in other words, the people who have come back out of loyalty. I think if we want other stations, we're going to need real administration. And if we want to keep the ones that have come back, we're going to have to prove that we are a dependable and viable service. The third issue is I think that in terms of programming issues, I think there's a lot of different questions involved with that. The only one I want to address at this time is I think that the idea of filling up the KU band or whatever medium we have to distribute our programming as a shared space with affiliates is a very powerful idea. I've several times at this meeting heard references to the need for more programming to keep up with the current political situation, and these affiliates are an incredible resource for cutting-edge programming. And it's kind of like an antique district. The more you consolidate programming, the more potent the package becomes. And I think this is a very synergistic idea that whose time has really come. I think there's a lot of potential there. And finally, I think the issue of the technology needs to be addressed. There's some options. I'm not sure it's my place to make judgments on that. I do know that the website is gaining the potential to make programming available online. That is something that's coming down the road, and it's something that should be at least looked at. I think in the future, downloading from the internet might be the way that will be more viable way to sell our programs, but again, that's I think should be studied more. So that is basically what I learned in a nutshell. It's a very, very amazing collection of radio stations with all sorts of different characteristics, and I think this is an area that has a lot of potential for Pacifica, and it's really kind of an opportunity at this point to take something and to redefine it into a large vision that can not only bring in revenue, but really bring in synergy and also protection in a strange sort of way in numbers, and really fulfill this kind of vision that once was put out of something larger than the whole, you know, the whole being larger than the parts. Thank you very much.
Okay, thanks.
Finally, I'd like to say that probably within about a week or a week and a half, the report with some cool graphs will be available on Pacifica.org. So if anybody's interested in that, cool graphs.
Okay, great. Well, thank you. This is probably, so far, the most thorough report we've gotten about the state of the affiliate program, even though we've, been talking about it off and on over the last months, but this really fills in a lot of the blanks, and I think hopefully helps ground the next period of work in terms of rebuilding this whole affiliate program. So I know you did it's obvious that you did a tremendous amount of work on this, and we really very much appreciate that. Do people have questions? Anybody on the board have questions, first of all? Rob?
Ursula, I'd just like you to help clarify the couple of things that I've heard in my conversations with affiliates before that are things that we, the board, should turn our attention to. And I'd just like you to tell me whether or not you think I'm hearing the right things or not. The first thing has to do with programming. My sense is that the affiliates would like to see more programming from Pacifica that's consistent, that's produced to higher standards of quality. And they might also like to work with Pacific in producing some original programming of their own, getting some of their own programming involved in the programs that are made available. That's the first thing. The second thing I've heard from a couple of people at affiliates is that Pacifica is behind the curve technologically, and you alluded to this, and they think in some ways they might be able to help us more than we're able to help them with adapting to new or implementing newer and better technology. And the third thing that I've heard from the affiliates is that the ones that I've spoken to do feel that by having a seat on the board that they will be able to help keep us moving towards better relations with affiliates, opening up more affiliate stations to Pacifica's network and so on and so forth. Are those generally the things that you think we should be hearing from affiliates, or am I in left field?
Everything you've described, I heard. I think one of the things that I learned is that it's a little bit harder to generalize affiliates than I thought. Yes, those opinions are expressed, but it's a huge spectrum of stations. A lot of stations are college stations that whose management turns over every year, and I think like something like 15 stations said they didn't even know anything about Pacifica because they were new, and you know I kind of had to tell them. So I, just as kind of a perspective, we're not talking about one kind of station here. The only common thing I heard was that people want dependable day-to-day programming support. Other than that, yes, everything you've said I did hear in various degrees. I think that there's a real interest in, particularly in Pacifica's ability to cover national protests because we have the resources, the stations don't. That's the thing I heard the most. There was interest in some of the national programming. When I brought up, most people didn't know about Peace Watch, and when I brought it up, there was actually a lot of interest in it. So it said to me that we are definitely not promoting our programming, and we don't know what the interest would be. But yes, there was, because Pacifica is seen as the resource to with the materials that they don't have. As far as the technology goes, as far as the programming goes, it's like a memory test. I got the impression that some of the stations are doing really exciting journalism and public affairs programming and would like to share it. They'd like to put it up on the KU band. They'd like to do a lot of things with it. They would like to work with us. They would like to air it on Pacifica. I think they're ready to work on that. And as far as the technology goes, nobody offered that. I realized I was talking to a pretty sophisticated bunch of people a lot of times technologically. But I think that with the work that Pete's doing, we're really jumping ahead too in terms of our technology. So I have no doubt that the affiliates would help with technology, and that's actually a really great idea. You know, the truth is that people played their cards pretty close to their chest when I called and said I'm calling from Pacifica. So people were tactful. People were tactful with me, and some opened up, and a lot of them were very careful because I in the report I mentioned the gentleman from the station at Stony Brook wouldn't even talk to me because he says so many people have called him saying they're from Pacifica, and he doesn't even answer those calls anymore because he doesn't know. He doesn't believe that they're real. And I got to them because I know somebody who's alumni, and he made the call for me and hooked me up. So, you know, it's like you're talking, you know, to a group of people who are being very, you know, careful right now and probably have a whole lot more to offer once they feel that we have really indicated an interest in you know, getting serious about working with them. Did that answer? I'm not sure. Is that it?
Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you. I want to add something here that I, you know, this has sort of come up in a variety of ways over the months, past several months, that I really think that what we have to think about here is not just what we're offering the affiliates, but what the affiliates have to offer us. And one thing that they offer us is, again, you know, more stations that are grounded in and committed to being community-based and corporate-free. You know, it's a whole orientation about the medium and, you know, what they're doing with their radio stations. And I think that's something that we need more of given the media world that we live in and all the pressures out there. Or in addition to things like creative programming and, you know, the potential to get our shows out to larger audiences also, you know, and all of that. So I really think that when we, you know, think about this affiliate program, it's really not in our long-term interest to think of this as a one-way street. It really is about the give and take and the partnership and the, you know, participating together. And that's some of what I'm hearing in you know, your comments here. So the other thing is that I think that there's some immediate things that we need to do better than we've done in this last year. And one thing that comes to mind is around the two things immediately. One is on the, especially on the special programs that we do when we cover the protests and et cetera, and
I'm assuming we're going to be doing more of those things, that we really, the minute we start to think that we might even be covering something, we need to get word out to the affiliates and to find out how many of them want to pick it up. How many of them will maybe want to send a production person to Washington or wherever the demonstration is, or a reporter, or, you know, somebody to participate. But also, just so they start thinking about their calendars and their programming schedule and start clearing time and all that, and not wait to the last minute or not do it at all. The other thing, by the way, related to that is to really use those special days as an opportunity. And this is not a requirement just from the national staff, but at each of our local stations, to, you know, when we're doing a special or covering something special that other groups out there might be interested in. Now, this is a way to help build our own audience and to do outreach for our stations and our broadcasts, to really get the word out that on X day we're covering this. You know, you ABC isn't going to be there giving you the kind of report you want. Tune in to us, you know, et cetera, and to really take advantage of that. I hope that we can convene, Teresa, the committee fairly soon in a conference call to figure out how to take this report, and maybe Ursula can be with us in that committee and help us figure out some of the next steps in rebuilding this program. I mean, some of these affiliates basically gave us a year, said, you know, we're going to hang in there. We want to see, you know, some initiatives from you and some reaching out and, you know, efforts to work with them in a different way. And then they're going to reevaluate, you know, whether or not it's moving in a good direction.
Yeah, I'd like to compliment Teresa, coming up with the idea of doing this. I think Teresa did, or somebody did, to come up with this survey. I have to say that across the board, every single station expressed appreciation for at least the beginning of some sort of process of taking stock and moving forward. It was very, very appreciated.
Okay, we have David, Carol, George.
I just want to reiterate, I've said this before. I mean, our mission is not to make money, obviously. We're not a for-profit. But our mission is not even to engage in business. Our mission is to spread the word and spread the mission. And I think we should certainly try to recoup value relative to the programming we send out to the stations, but I'm also curious, I don't know how it actually works, if we were to, like, how do you give free access, introductory access? I'm reminded of the Tom Lehrer song, The Old Dope Peddler, the line which goes, he gives a kid free samples because he knows full well that today's young innocent faces will be tomorrow's clientele. I think if we could somehow give out free, you know, like, say, look, we're having this coverage on this demonstration or this interesting, you know, item. Is it possible for a station to download that without being an affiliate for the purpose that we just announced? This is free stuff. Mm-hmm. Get the word out. Mm-hmm. Is that technically easy for us to do?
I think that, yes, we have to begin coming up with a promotional strategy. How do we get the word out? I'm from Iowa, and people that know me, I go there regularly because of my parents. And it's devastating when I go there. Iowa is in this pocket in the Midwest where there's no stations. And it's devastating to the frustration that people are feeling there, not having anything. And I think I'm really serious that, you know, this need to expand at this time is very important. And I think promotional strategies are very important at this point. And yes, I think, you know, a lot of the stations right now that are taking Democracy Now are not paying for it at the time. And I don't know about Free Speech Radio News, but I you know, this, it's like none of this is a hard business thing right now. It's basically, and it's been demonstrated by these two programs that there's a tremendous market that's very rapidly growing because this is a very valuable service.
Okay, we have Carol, George, and Ray, and not a lot of time.
Very quickly, I just want to raise the issue that we in our five stations tend to get very provincial, and we're, you know, I'm from KPFA, and KPFA world is real, and PFW takes the same attitude, and I think that we really need to be connected with the larger community radio movement, and we need affiliate representation on our board to help us do that, and I just want to thank you for the work.
Okay. George?
Ursula.
Can you revisit, please, for 1 second, this business of we're on the KU satellite, and that's people need the radio stations need special equipment for that, whereas if they were on another more standard satellite, they wouldn't need the equipment? Is that what you say?
That's right. Pacifica used to be on the C-band, which is a public, national public radio managed, and then it was moved.
Why?
Because, now, as I understand it, I spoke with Brian Gibbons and a few other people that were involved at the time. What they said was that Pacifica had an ambition. It aspired to build its own distribution system. So it isolated its programming on a different satellite, and that so that the people buying the program then would move with Pacifica to this other band, which would then be filled with Pacifica programming.
Jim, add on.
I just wanted to add one thing that was a major factor in the decision of why Pacifica went to the KU satellite. So they didn't have to pay to put programs up on the C-band anymore. It was basically free for us to do that other than operating the channel that we were using.
Right, and added to that, the assumption was that if there was a certain level of growth, of annual growth, that in fact the KU system, the distribution system, could be an enormous new source for revenue for the network. There was also that component.
This was part of that whole package of rethinking the direction of Pacifica.
Mm-hmm.
It was just one part of what was beginning to take us down that slippery slope.
Right.
That was part of the crisis.
I've also been told that another motivation was that if Pacifica would isolate the affiliates and add a whole bunch of them, it would create a more favorable package for getting grants. So it was, an attempt to kind of build a larger independent image to make us available for big money, in a sense.
Okay, sort of like having an IBM-based system versus a system?
Apple.
No, and let me just suggest that this is a larger conversation. I don't think it's quite like that. I think there was a political dimension here. It wasn't just, here's one operating system and here's another one. There was a political direction that the old leadership of this organization was going in, and it had to do with building a business,
that's right,
not strengthening community radio.
Right.
There's a difference there.
And that's the point I'm making, is that in a strange sort of way, it's a fluke of history that they did this.
Right.
Clearly they weren't serious about the mission because they completely let it collapse.
Right.
However, in a strange sort of way, the mission stayed because the people involved realized that there was a potential to use this large coalition for a real political mission, and that's kind of what we have inherited and have the possibility to fulfill if we want to.
Ray was next.
Yeah, I just had were you able to assess where they stand in terms of how they want to come in to a new election with us? For example, we voted recently to create as large seats on the national board, and at one point there was a problem as to how they would define themselves, how they would actually come to consensus and so on. Are they closer to that? Have you discussed that at all with them?
I didn't really, because I felt it was kind of beyond my scope. Honestly, most of the stations did not respond a whole lot to that, and I don't know if it's because they didn't want to discuss it with me. A lot of them really drew a blank. You know, two of them said, oh, that's crazy, and weren't even interested. But there obviously were a large number of stations who said, yes, we know that, and then left it at that. I spoke with Marty Derlin about it at length and asked her how people should contact, that network, and she said, through the grassroots radio conference, or, I kind of left that part open because I felt that in a way that I just kind of left that alone in a way. And
okay. Reem's on the phone.
No, I got a phone call from Errol Maitland, a point of information that the reason we also went with the KU is that we were scared that with the content, our more radical content will be kicked off an NPR managed and owned distribution system, and that's very important to put forth.
Okay. Actually, there's one other point I want to raise here that relates back to our budget discussion earlier, and the specifically national staffing. We have heard from the affiliates, and then Ursula made it very clear again in her report, that one of the pieces of strengthening and rebuilding this program, the affiliate program, is to have a staff person. I'm not saying it's a full-time job, but somebody who's at least part of their job is the relationships with affiliates. The affiliates we already have, and hopefully the recruitment, if you will, of more affiliates, the lining up of more affiliates and stuff. Again, without meaning to open up a whole can of worms here, personally, I think that job is a higher priority than a national program director at this point in the life of this organization. And again, we have to see what happens, you know, with the development of the national office budget. But I really want us to think about this as a part of the project of rebuilding Pacifica, not just rebuilding the affiliate program, but rebuilding Pacifica and what we're all about in, you know, in this moment in history. You know, there's been talk and people have raised the need to think about raising money, trying to, you know, develop a capital campaign to raise money to buy more licenses. That might be an interesting thing to do, but I think a much more immediate and potentially, you know, obviously I think a more immediately successful use of our resources is to put some staff time into strengthening the whole affiliate program. For me, it's not about how many licenses we own. It's about the content of the programming reaching more and more audiences. That's the critical thing, and I don't think we have to own more licenses to find ways to bring the message and the messages and the cultural programming, the arts program, the whole package out to more and more audiences around this country. So I really, this whole discussion for me just reinforces the need to re-examine the national staffing pattern and to make sure that there's somebody, because it's not just about the technical stuff, which is critical, and it's not just about the billing, which obviously is a necessary task. It's about building the relationships, and that requires some real attention. So, one technical point, and then Dina's on the committee, so we'll hear from her too.
You know, a lot of folks know.
Who are you?
My name is Pete Krakus. I work on the website for Pacifica.org. A lot of folks know about peer-to-peer file sharing, like Napster, where two random folks in the world can share files and music. Essentially, what the affiliates are asking for is a peer-to-peer connection where they're one peer and we are another, and we can connect in both ways. You know, we can send files in both directions. We should be depending on our budget. I mean, I'm conflicted here because I work for the website and I want resources for the website, but I hear this, and frankly, I think that, as you said, Leslie, the resources put here are more immediate. If resources are put on the website, we could, within 6 months, have a system that we can share files and do away with the KU if we want to do this all online. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, that would take away resources from other things. I think in hearing this, frankly, it's not a technical point, but when I hear that 100 cities are having peace rallies on every month or so, I think to myself, we need to have 100 affiliates. Right. You know, every one of these cities wants and needs our programming. And right. Yesterday I heard a lot of people say... I heard people talk about an outreach person and a national outreach person. I know you, I mean, this, as the board of directors here, I'm asking, kind of conflicted as also an employee, for direction in, I think, steering us in this direction. I think a national outreach coordinator could do the job of doubling, tripling, quadrupling our affiliates in the next 12 months. And I claimed before that we can do this online, but more immediately we can do this in the real world. So I really want to. I heard this report, and I know Ursula, so I heard her data, and frankly, I got very excited. And so I think this is a great opportunity for us to immediately grow our base. And I think we should really think about putting resources here. And
thank you. Okay, Dina, do you want to have that final word on this?
Yeah. No. Just clarity from the board that because the affiliates put in for representation on the board, that whether it come out of the three at large or if the at large doesn't get voted in, is there another mechanism by which an affiliate could sit on the board? just so it doesn't get lost in the cracks, that somehow we get representation from affiliates. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you. Teresa, do you want to?
This is Teresa, and you gave our committee and the board a challenge a little earlier, and I don't want to be a bottleneck. I realize perhaps I have been. I think we're ready to go. I think that I give permission for people to gently nag me as the head of this committee to stay on task. I would like it to be reciprocal. I would like somebody to say, this is so-and-so from KEOS and such, or this is so-and-so from, you know, WMNF in Tampa. Is that right?
Yes.
Did I get it right?
Yes.
Oh, my gosh. I think that would be good to hear, to get past some of this this feeling that, you know, here we're in Houston, where it's all at. I think it'd be so good to hear all of these different voices in different cities and give the impression that we're a huge network and there's solidarity. Mm-hmm. There's some comfort in common ground, mm-hmm, among all of these stations. So please assist us in keeping on task, keeping, you know, building this network. Thank you.
Okay, great. Thank you. So again, thank you, Ursula, for really helping us focus this work. Thanks. Okay, we have one more agenda item for this evening, and then we will adjourn for the evening. And that is on the race and nationality. Again, just to remind everybody, back in June, we were given a set of proposals that we adopted as sort of guidelines and goals and direction to be moving in on dealing with issues of race and nationality and diversity throughout the network, at every level of the network. And then we had a little more discussion about that in September, the September meeting, and now we need to talk about it again. One thing is that we had asked for the labs at each station to be involved in helping to make sure that committees were set up at each station to, folks, can we have it quiet in the room, please? So anyway, we asked for the labs to help make sure that committees were set up at each station to discuss the dynamics around race and nationality and diversity issues at the station, to see where the weaknesses were, what the strengths were, what we could learn, what needs to be worked on, you know, and to look at the set of 8 recommendations that we had gotten and what needs to be implemented. Let me just say that this is, I think, one of the places, yesterday when I spoke, I said how the bylaws process has been somewhat draining on us. This is one of the places where all that energy has been going into bylaws discussion. If half of that energy, if a third of that energy was going into this work around the race and nationality, we would be a whole lot further along in this. So it's just an example of what I was trying to get at yesterday. Anyway, we now have, I don't know if everybody got, someone distributed a proposal for a national coordinator, which we did discuss in the September meeting, and my recollection was that Jim Bennett, as the from KPFA, the manager at KPFA, had offered actually on an interim basis, I believe, it wasn't clear how long a basis, would help fund this position of a national coordinator. I don't know who actually put this on our... Steve? So,
it's from Steve.
Yeah. So maybe, Steve, do you want to open this up, make a few comments, or whoever from the committee is going to do that? Great. Thanks.
Thank you. We want to thank you for allowing us to give you an update on a report. First, we did want to say how great it is to be here in Bleary, Washington, D.C., with probably the most representation I've seen from the board. It was really wonderful to see so many members here today. And we have a report that we wanted to give you to update you on our process so far. Briefly, as you mentioned, during the Pacific Canal Conference, which took place back in June in Berkeley, a racially diverse group of more than 25 listeners, activists, president and former staff members from 4 or 5 of the Pacifica stations met to discuss anti-racist initiatives for the network. A resolution resulting from this dialogue was adopted by the Interim Pacifica National Board at their June meeting. It's been very difficult and complicated work, and I agree that if the amount of energy and dedication in regards to the bylaws, if a tenth of that was applied to other issues that are very major, there's so much that we can accomplish together. It's been very complicated, and we're going to try and give you a blow-by-blow of some of the results and the process and hopefully where we want to go and where we can go from here. And I did want to say in the beginning of that wherever we go, it's going to take all of us, all the stations, all the commitment to trying to resolve the issues as they affect us all in regards to race and diversity, both internally as it relates to Pacifica and externally as it relates to society in general. So with that, I'd like to begin by introducing you to Glenda, who's going to give you her introduction to the process in regards to this issue.
Great. You'll now put the mic.
Hello.
My name is Glenda Bush. I'm from the KPFA listening area. I'm a member of the Coalition for Democratic Pacifica there and also a member of the Diversity Committee. I want to briefly go back to our initial, just to recap briefly how we got here, to our resolution in June that we proposed to the board. I have some copies here for people who haven't seen it or who want to see it again. For people that listen on the radio, they can go, if they have internet access, to WBAI.net, find the June board meeting, and they'll find the document to read. This was a document which had 8 areas, basically, of suggested improvement on the issues of race and nationality in all areas of Pacifica. I think our starting point was dialogue. There should be dialogue on all levels of Pacifica about this. There should be training within the staff and the listener and the governance, people involved in the governance of Pacifica. There should be programming, community outreach, and collecting data in the different stations and on the national level on race and nationality. And also, we wanted to have some goals and guidelines, and then to be able to evaluate how, after a year, how far have we come? Did we make progress on all these areas? And also another important thing is affirmative action and representation in on the staff. At the June meeting, the IPNB basically supported, Leslie said that already, supported the spirit of our proposal and also supported or voted on to have, parallel to the bylaws process, a national committee, in addition to the local diversity committee. So they actually voted on a direct involvement of the IPNB. And then the initial group worked on email and with conference calls to further that work. Then at the Houston meeting, we basically asked for support, resources, and help, because it's very, very difficult on a volunteer basis across the country at 5 different stations with 5 different situations and very specific problems to get this work done and to make progress. And so at the Houston meeting, we were asking for help and we were asking for a paid position, for someone who could pick this up as a job and be more coordinated and be more effective than a volunteer effort can be. Then Jim Bennett very generously offered this 2-month position. And I would like Jim to come up after we're done and kind of state what his offer is and how he sees that now, being in December already. And after that meeting, we try to set up a process. How are we going to do this? I mean, we are not an elected group. We are a spontaneous group that came together, and we had to figure out who has the mandate, or who are the people that would work on a job description, figure out how to post it, interview people, and then suggest their selection to Dan, who is the executive director. And we came up with the process to have one person of each lab designated from each area to have this selection committee or recommendation committee. And where we are right now is that we have 4 out of 5 labs have designated that person. And WPFW, the person was selected head of draw, and so we have to get another person from PFW. And that's where we are right now in that process. And it's a long and difficult process, but I think this is just how Pacifica is in trying to get something done on the national level.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. I'm Mary Berg, a member of the, an unpaid staff member of the local advisory board, and also a member of the diversity committee, also a member of the Coalition for a Democratic Pacifica. And we have tried to make progress since June, even though we were doing it on this volunteer basis. 2 other stations have developed diversity committees, and at KPFA, we have, our committee has been of the most vibrant of all of the lab committees, I think. We've had as many as 40 people attending from time to time. Not everyone can come all the time, but there is an interest in it. And we have developed, it's in the final stages now, a comprehensive questionnaire, a diversity questionnaire to be handed to all staff so that we can, paid, unpaid, and as I said, we had 12 categories of people there, and to all 12 of them, so that we can see what we really have going. Also, Max Blanchet, who is a member of the diversity committee, completed the surveys that we spoke of last night, and you've had copies of exactly what programming goes on in prime time, what is the composition of paid, unpaid in various categories, what is their ethnicity, and so forth. And we hope that other stations, as you said last night, will follow that model. Those are just a few of the things. We are embarked on other things, including mediation workshops and some other projects. But we've been moving forward. But we do need some help now.
My name is Bob Lederer. I'm a member of the unpaid staff at WBAI and part of this National Anti-Racism Working Group of Pacifica. And I just wanted to bring this to the question of what we're asking of this board today. We obviously have been working as hard as we can on an unpaid basis to move forward this process that the board endorsed in June, and have made some headway. But we're very hopeful that with the hiring of a coordinator for this work nationally, even though initially it will only be for a 2-month period, that will help jumpstart the process at all 5 stations. And we hope that this may open doors to funding for a longer-term position. Now, before this meeting, we had developed a proposal that we delivered to you today for a paid national coordinator for the entire fiscal year, coming out of the national budget, to kind of pick up after Jim Bennett's offer of a 2-month position leaves off. But after hearing the discussion this morning of the dire situation with the national budget of Pacifica, we understand and however reluctantly want to say that we can see that this may not be a realistic goal for the national budget to fully fund this fiscal year, but we think it's of the utmost urgency that it be funded as soon as possible next year or even at a later point in this year. But that in addition, that there are a lot of expenses involved in conference calls and travel that will be coming up to coordinate and learn from the experiences in each city. There is, as Mary was saying, important work that's been done in Berkeley and the beginnings of work in other cities that people need to share and learn from as far as training workshops and methods of having censuses of staffs and methods of having dialogue and actual planning, affirmative action planning with teeth in it. And so all of this is going to require a lot more support. And so we would ask the board for allocating funds for the support of this kind of work to go along with the two-month funding that has already been put forward. And then the second thing is that this board did set up a race and nationality committee in June. Mm-hmm. To our knowledge, it hasn't yet met, but we would like to request a